We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? The Bronx Pinstripe Show number 22. We are recording this Sunday night right after the women just won the World Cup against Japan. 5-2, an absolute blowout if you're talking about soccer. Scott, did you watch the game?
Yeah, that game was over when it was 3-0. I thought it was over actually at 2-0, and then I got yelled at a bunch. We're like, they can score three goals. I was like, that's a wrap, man. There's no possible way that they're letting up three goals. So it was kind of anticlimactic, but it was pretty awesome seeing them come firing out in the beginning. Those women they came out hot, real hot. So that was cool to see.
So 5-2 in a championship game, that's like if the final game of the World Series was decided like 25-3 or something crazy.
Yeah, I kind of feel for the goaltender because I feel like she made a bunch of mistakes, the Japanese goaltender, and I hope – some of these countries, man, when they go back home, they just get treated like crazy. I mean, I remember watching a 30-for-30 on the Columbia – I mean, granted, this was a long time ago, but the Pablo Escobar days, and, like, one of their dudes got shot in the street. And, I mean, it's crazy what some of these countries put behind soccer. So, hopefully she's okay. Maybe she should just stay in hiding for a little bit.
Yeah, I think she'll be fine. I think if this were the men's World Cup, I think the goalie would have to worry a little bit more. Not that women's World Cup isn't a serious, event and everything, but you know how some of these countries, especially like you said, like Colombia or something, takes it. But
yeah, it was exciting though. It was fun to watch. I think it's one of my favorite events is the women's World Cup. I actually like the women's World Cup more than I do the men's World Cup. Maybe that's just because USA is better, but. it's a lot of fun to watch, and they're good. They're really good.
Yeah, I mean, today was the first goals they've given up.
Yeah, that's right. That was it's impressive. They're definitely impressive, and they have some. They kept, I think, some of the older players on the team for maybe some leadership positions that come in later in the games. But there's a lot of the young stars doing some. One of the girls is from Jersey, actually. The girl that had the three goals today was from Jersey.
So that's 2 minutes of soccer breakdown. That's as much as I have in me. I don't know about you, but
I got nothing else against soccer.
When you were talking, I was like, I don't know what he's talking about anymore. I'm just going to let you talk.
I just looked up the one girl because I heard she was from Jersey, and I wanted to see what town she was from.
All right, so 4th of July weekend. Happy 4th. Happy 4th to everyone out there. What'd you do this weekend?
So I was in. I had some awesome seats for the Macy's Day fireworks. I put a bunch of pictures up on Instagram and on Twitter, actually. But my sister lives in Brooklyn and Williamsburg, so we were on the rooftop up there checking them out, and it was awesome. And they had four barges out in the East River, and it was right in front of the Empire State Building. So you kind of got a light show at the Empire State Building, and then the fireworks did not disappoint. They were pretty awesome. So. I was in Brooklyn for a couple of days.
Yeah, fireworks are one of those things that pictures usually do not do them justice, but I saw those pictures you posted, and that looked pretty awesome.
Yeah, we took probably 4,000 pictures, though, so you have to like go through them to find the ones that are not blurry. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. We had some good, nice little party on the top of her apartment building, and it was a good time.
Nice. I was down in Rhode Island back home with the family. It was my cousin's graduation party / 4th of July cookout. My uncle does it every year. So it was a lot of fun. We set off some mini fireworks, sparklers in the backyard. And luckily, no one pulled a Jason Pierre-Paul and blew their hand off.
Oh my gosh. I just read about that. That was crazy.
Yeah, that sucks.
You always hear about the firework mishaps on the 4th of July.
What the hell is he doing? He needs to hire a guy.
Right? What's he looking for? That extra little thrill? Come on, man. You need those hands.
Yeah.
Isn't he due a contract soon too? I mean, that's no good.
Yeah, he's gonna lose some money on that one.
Some fingers and some money. That's bad.
Yeah. And then today I was at the beach. It was finally nice out. Yesterday was kind of crummy. Today I went to the beach back home in Rhode Island, and I always miss a spot with sunscreen, and today I missed literally a line from my neck down to my stomach, just like a line. It's just beet red. I'm like translucent. I burn anyway, but first real time at the beach this year, just absolutely toasted.
Nice. I have my wife apply most of the suntan lotion, so I have someone else to blame. That's because I don't trust myself doing it because I do the same exact thing.
I know. Yeah. No excuses this time. It's not like I was drunk or anything, so.
Well, there you go. Only yourself.
All right, let's get into some Yankees baseball talk. Yankees are in first place, one game lead over Baltimore. Last time we talked, they were tied for second, so they jumped up a little bit this week, which is good. They're 44-38, sole possession of first place, which is always good. And since last time we talked, they lost 2 of 3 in Anaheim, but then they won 2 of 3 over Tampa this weekend. So, you know, finally the road trip was done. They've been on the road a lot this year, and they're a better team, especially offensively at home. So it was good to finally get home.
Yeah, and, you know, I heard a lot of the people, everybody talking about the schedule, and the Yankees have definitely had a tough schedule the first half of the season, and we're going to be at home more often in the second half. So I think the schedule actually plays in our favor. And obviously, you know, we've built this team, for the most part, I'd say, around, you know, that short porch in right field. So being home is going to be a huge advantage for the Yankees.
Definitely, definitely. All right, so Monday in Anaheim, the Yankees lost 4-1. This was CeCe. He pitched this game, and it was actually a better start for him than we've seen recently, but still got the loss, and that makes him 3-8 on the season. And I was looking at some of the stats or some of the numbers, and the team is 6-9 in games that he started.
Yeah, that's not great. It's unfortunate the way, you know, when he finally delivers a, you know, a quality performance, I guess, and the bats can't do anything behind him. CJ Wilson just kind of shut down the Yankees, and Gardner was one of the lone bright spots in the lineup with 3 hits, and he's just been raking as of late.
Yeah, it was really sort of a lousy game all the way around, and I guess some more news came out after that game. Some people took this as bad news, is that they were officially moving Adam Warren to the bullpen. So this sort of 6-man rotation experiment only lasted one time through the rotation, and Warren got pushed to the pen.
Yeah, and this kind of leads me to believe that Girardi was not really doing a 6-man rotation. He was just stretching a couple guys out in the beginning to see what was going to happen, and that he really wasn't committed to that. So it seems like that was all kind of a bunch of smoke and mirrors. But this is the move that you and I have talked about for some time, and we kind of saw it coming because it's the one that makes the most sense, really. I mean, you keep hearing the chirps for CeCe to go to the bullpen and for Warren to stay in the bullpen. And if you're looking at their starting numbers, okay, I can see how that makes some sense. But if you're looking at the people, CeCe's never pitched in the bullpen. He's not a bullpen arm. And Warren's had a lot of success in the pen. And we need right-handed pitching out there. So it's really the move that makes the most sense.
What annoyed me about this is that they sort of sold it to us as an innings management thing for Warren. They said he's already exceeded his innings limit from last year, which is true. And they just want to, you know, that was like the main reason they're moving to the pen, because they don't want him to injure himself, which I'm sure plays a factor. But just call it what it is. You're not moving CeCe to the pen because, like you just said, he's never pitched in the pen. His stuff doesn't translate there. And you need Warren in the pen. You have a lack of right-handers. I don't know why they just can't say that.
Well, I don't think CeCe's even an option. I don't think it's between him and CeCe for the pen, personally, because CeCe's not going to go in the pen. It's just not going to happen. Not to mention they have, you know, an abundance of left-handed pitching out there, so they don't need another lefty out there. They have a guy named Chris Capuano who can be stretched out as a long lefty, so they just need the right-handed pitcher. So, I mean, I see what you're saying. I don't think it's between one or the other, but I think it's just Warren is the guy that needs to go out there because he's had success in there in the past.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think it's going to really make for a dominant bullpen once Miller's back, especially. Then you're talking about a back end of the bullpen of Miller, Betances, Warren, Shreve, and Wilson.
Yeah. And, you know, with the recent success of Shreve and Wilson and now adding Warren, again, we touched on this last week because Shreve and Wilson have been really good lately, and they've kind of stepped up, you know, with Miller being out. And you're adding another very high quality arm in the back of that. In the back of that bullpen, and you know, the back is starting to kind of leak into the sixth inning, right? So it gives us a lot of a pretty big security blanket, I think, in the games.
Really does shorten the game, and this team has shown the ability to come back in late innings, and the bullpen should keep them in a lot of games, either tied or only down a run or two. So hopefully they can win a lot of games like we saw over the weekend coming back. So I think people are just upset because Warren's been so good in the rotation, but I think he's going to do even better in the pen.
So, yeah, I get it. And I think Jabba, the whole Jabba situation, the way that the Yankees kind of treated him and the way that a lot of people feel like they ruined him with going back and forth and back and forth, I think people are still kind of salty from that whole situation, and they don't want to see that happen to Warren.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to move him back. That would just be another, like you said, Jabba situation, and then you're going to blow the kid's arm out, and everybody loses in that scenario.
Right, I agree. Not moving him back, though. I'm not going to go as far as saying they won't do it.
Yeah.
I could see it happening.
They shouldn't, anyway.
Right.
All
right,
Tuesday, they lost 2-1. Again, the offense totally flat. They only had 4 base runners in the entire game. And it's sort of one of those things that it's extremely evident on the road is that when they don't hit home runs, they don't score runs.
Right. I mean, the team doesn't hit for average. We hit a lot of home runs. So this is what we're going to see. We're going to see this feast or famine. And when they're not hitting, it's just, you know, it's kind of painful to watch. So this week was we saw a lot of anemic offense. We saw just not good at bats. And, you know, when we're not hitting the ball, it's kind of painful to watch. But when these guys are, the ball's flying out of the ballpark.
Ivan Nova on Tuesday, that was his second start back from the DL. And it was another good start. It wasn't quite as good as the first one, but it was definitely another step in the right direction because I think the most important thing is he was healthy. The only real hiccup he had was back-to-back home runs he gave up to Pujols and Eric Ibar in the sixth inning. And I know you look at that Anaheim lineup, and other than Trout and Pujols, they don't really have many hitters. But you give up 2 runs in a game, you got to win.
Yeah, and it's the sixth inning, right? And he's pitching with a 1-0 lead. So, I mean, he's pitching with no room for error at all. Second start back. I mean, let's score some runs for this guy. Let him kind of groove back into the rotation. You know what I mean? I mean, this has been kind of that's tough to pitch into the sixth inning with a 1-run lead and just be as careful as you need to be on your second spot back. So he pitched very well. He pitched very well. I've been very happy with him since he's returned.
I mean, it's hard enough to stay up till 1 a.m. and watch these West Coast games.
No kidding.
But when your offense is scoring 1 run a game and 4 base runners, it's like I'm passing out.
It's like one eye open. Yeah, I agree.
All right. Wednesday, the game actually started at a normal time, 7 o'clock. It was an afternoon game out there in Anaheim. And the Yankees won this game 3-1. Eovaldi pitched 5 1/3 innings and no runs. He came out of the game. He had the bases loaded, and Shreve sort of bailed him out of the jam there. But I know you and I are going to, you know, argue a little bit on Eovaldi here, but he's definitely, definitely improving.
You know, the past 3 games, he's had 3 starts in a row that have been quality starts. If you look on Bronx Pinstripes, one of our guys put an article up, Steven Jacobson put an article up about how Eovaldi has been really changing what he's doing and throwing his split and his curve a lot more and kind of, you know, laying off that fastball as much and really changing speed. So he breaks it down. Steven Jacobson on our site breaks down this the Eovaldi's kind of turnaround with a lot of statistical backup. So if you're a stat guy, definitely check it out. It's a good read. But yeah, I mean, just by the eye test, I'm a big eye test guy. And just by watching him, he seems more comfortable. He seems a lot more confident. And that's huge because he's still throwing 100 miles an hour. And he's still, you know, throwing in up until the fifth inning, even before, for the most part, he was good. So we just need to stretch him out a little bit. He needs to get deeper into games. That's kind of the next step, I think.
So I'm looking at some of those numbers right now. And before this little stretch of good games that he's had, batters were hitting .329 off of him, which is just absolutely outrageous. You're never going to win games if you're giving up a .329 average. But in this 17 1/3 inning stretch where he's had good games, they're only hitting .206. And for Eovaldi to be holding guys to .206 is pretty damn good.
Yeah, and, you know, he mentions in the article, too, about how unlucky he's been, if you have that in front of you. But he's been one of those guys, and just from me watching him, I mean, we've talked about this a bunch. I mean, everybody who listens to the show knows I'm big on potential. I mean, as are the Yankees, obviously, because that was the big reason they got him. They see the big guy, they see the big arm, and they think, you know, Rothschild really thinks he can work with him and turn him into a pitcher. And over the past 3 starts, he's definitely been improving. And the kid is not using his fastball as much, which is good because that means people are not picking it out as much and they're not sitting red. Because I don't care how hard you throw a ball in the major leagues, you're going to get hit if it's just a fastball and that's the only pitch you can locate. So the fact that he's mixing in these other pitches and is able to locate them is a very good thing.
It's definitely encouraging that he's getting better. And you're right, it is like watching a different pitcher right now because he's thrown his curve and his split a lot more, and his split is looking pretty good. So yes, I'm looking forward to his next start, but I'm not quite ready to say that he's completely turned his season around.
Well, he's what's his record right now? I think he's 7-2 or 8-2, or he's pretty much got the best record on the team as well. And I know he's throwing around a 4 ERA, but let's get on the couch here for a second, okay? let's just talk about the real reason you don't like him. Why is the real reason you don't like Nathan Eovaldi?
I have no damn clue what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's a reason. There's a reason behind it.
All right, he looks exactly like Carl Pavano.
There it is. And that's why you don't like him.
And any Yankee fan listening, if you are older than 12 years old, you loathe Carl Pavano. And I know that I'm just sort of being, you know, I'm trying to be funny here, but that's not really the reason I dislike him. I don't dislike him. I think he has been, you know, pretty good since they got him. I'm happy. I always say, you know, you always trade offense for pitching, and that's what they did. So I'm encouraged by his last few starts. I want to see more of it, though. I'm not ready to say Eovaldi has transformed his game yet.
No, I agree with that. I mean, we definitely need to see more. We need to see more than 3 starts, but it's definitely, like you said, it's a step in the right direction, and seeing it 3 times in a row is extremely encouraging.
Definitely, definitely. All right, so the Yankees got out of Anaheim salvaging 1 game of the trip, and thank God, but that is the last time they're on the West Coast this year. Which, yeah, I mean, it's we're halfway through the season and they're done with West Coast games.
It's pretty nice to get rid of it, get it out of the way by now, right?
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. And we talked about it earlier in this episode that they're better at home than they are on the road. But the West Coast, I don't care how good or bad the teams are. Those are always tough games. So done with that. Thank God. All right, so they came back home Friday against Tampa. And Tampa had been in a real rough stretch. They had almost been no-hit 3 nights in a row by Cleveland. And Cleveland's got great pitching, but Tampa really just has no hitting right now. Longoria, who's always been their best hitter, his wrist is a little sore, I think, and so he's had some issues. So really just a flat offensive team coming into the Bronx. And on Friday night, it was Tanaka versus Archer, which is a great pitching matchup. Archer absolutely owns the Yankees.
He's just brutal on the Yankees.
Yeah, and you figure Tanaka can own Tampa, especially with the way they're going. But they sort of roughed him up early in that game, scored 2 quick runs off of him.
Yeah, and it was kind of... I was on Twitter for this game, watching it and tweeting as well, and it was like, oh, here we go again. You know, we really need him to settle in because he's had a couple bad starts before this. And this was a perfect opportunity at home against a struggling offense for him to kind of... get his mojo back. And after those first two runs came across the plate and in the first inning, you were kind of scratching your head, but he did settle in and really pitched a much better game after that.
Yeah, his final line was fine. It was 6 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs, but he did have 96 pitches. And I'm sorry, but 3 runs against Tampa, like I just said, it's like giving up 5 runs to a normal hitting team, in my opinion.
But, yeah, it's definitely still, you know, we're still kind of waiting for him to come back to and regain his dominant stuff, because the last 3 games, you just haven't seen it. You haven't seen that bite on the ball that he had, before that. And I'm glad that he settled down, because I was really, really, really hoping that we weren't going to see another train wreck. And luckily we didn't. So hopefully he can kind of rebound, or he can kind of build off of the way he finished that game and bring it into the next start.
Well, the game got interesting in the 8th inning. Teixeira tied the game with a 3-run bomb down the right field line. And I'm sorry, Teixeira needs to be on the All-Star team. And especially with Cabrera now on the DL with a calf injury, you got to put Tex there at first base. Maybe he doesn't start, but he's got to be on the team.
I totally agree with you. I mean, we need to see him on there. That home run was awesome. I got so fired up when that happened. So that was... I love seeing these comeback wins in Yankee Stadium. Like, there's nothing better than that, in my opinion. When we're trailing at the stadium, not that we're trailing, but when we come back, whether it's a big home run or a big hit like that, that place just rocks and it gets fired up. I love it.
Yep, I definitely get the feeling that in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, if this team is within a run or two or even 3, they've got a chance.
Yeah, no doubt about it. With the pop that we have, and we have pop on the bench now too. You can never say die with this team. That's huge, and especially if we continue and we have this strength in the back of the pen, when we have this offense late in games, there's no doubt about it, we can get to other teams' bullpens.
So the game goes to extras, and I had a little bit of a pet peeve with what Girardi did in the 12th inning. Warren is pitching. He had already pitched the previous inning, and he gave up a one-out single. And Joe takes him out and brings in Shreve. Now, I love Shreve. Shreve's been absolutely great. But Warren has been one of your best pitchers all year, and he's stretched out, and he can go 3, 4, maybe even 5 innings because we've already seen a 19-inning game that's happened this year. You don't know how long the game's going to go. And you got a guy in there who's good and also can pitch a lot. And he takes him out for a short reliever, and Shreve just sort of totally lost the strike zone, ended up giving up 2 runs. And I just don't really understand that decision.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny that it was Shreve that came in, too, because it's kind of been opposite for the beginning of the season with Girardi, right? I mean, he hadn't had the confidence in Shreve, it seemed like, and he would take him out prematurely. And this time it was kind of reversed. But I get it. Warren is still stretched out. At least more than anybody else out there. So I would have definitely left him in as well.
Yeah. And Shreve got out of – he gave up 2 runs, but then he got out of a jam, and he gave the Yankees a chance. And Teixeira had an RBI single, and then McCann with the walk-off three-run bomb as fireworks were going off behind the right field bleachers, which I thought was awesome. Best win of the year by far.
It was going off before his at bat too. I mean, it wasn't like these fireworks had started. You know, if you didn't watch the game, these fireworks did not start like after he hit the ball. They were going off. I think in the the at bat beforehand.
Yeah.
So it was pretty interesting to see. And yeah, it was a no doubter off the bat. It was gone. It was awesome.
So Teixeira and McCann won this game absolutely. And yep. I was listening. I was at the beach today, as I said. I was listening to the radio. I wasn't able to watch the game. But Susan Waldman was talking about that every time the team runs out to the field, it's either Teixeira or McCann that lead them out. The past 20 years, it's been Jeter. But that's showing that if Teixeira and McCann are the ones leading them out, there's your veteran leadership. That seems like they've been sort of the voice of the Yankees this year. They've been the leaders in the clubhouse.
Yeah, and you definitely see it from McCann, you know, just being the catcher. He's the guy who's kind of you know, telling everybody what to do in the infield, and he's kind of the, when you're on the field, he's the guy in charge. He's kind of like the field general, right? So I definitely saw those leadership qualities when he came over. And Tex is really, I think, it seemed like, I always thought Tex was more of a quiet guy, but as he's gotten older and, you know, become more of the, one of the longer tenured guys, you definitely see him being a lot more outspoken with the rest of the guys. So yeah, it's good to see for sure. With the veterans in there. I think Girardi also plays a big... I think they have a really good chemistry, actually. And the more I think about it and I'm talking about it, I see a lot of guys really just contributing to that because A-Rod's also been one of those guys who hasn't been outspoken, really, and you don't see it as much, but he's definitely doing a lot in that clubhouse.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that this probably has been one of the... as far as chemistry goes, one of the better teams they've had in recent memory.
Yeah, I agree with that. I totally agree with that.
So Saturday was another exciting walk-off win for them, this time in the 9th inning. But the game started, and they got 2 quick runs, and then the offense went flat, which, what else is new, right?
Feast or famine, baby. That's what we got to live with. That's what's going to be with this team. You know, we don't hit for average, but we hit the ball far. So, yeah, you know, that's happened quite a few times where we get off the starts and then kind of lay dormant for a few innings and then come back to life when the game is on the line.
So I think they lead the league in first inning runs.
Do they? Okay, that's good to know. I wonder what the stats are. We'd have to look it up for maybe next show what they are from like inning 3 to 6.
Probably near the bottom. Just a hunch.
Yeah.
So Pineda pitched this game and it was his second good start in a row. He pitched last Sunday in Houston. He got the loss, but he did pitch 8 innings, which was a complete game. On Saturday against Tampa, he pitched 7 innings, 5 hits, no runs, 10 Ks and only 1 walk. And his K to walk ratio is 8.08, which is best in the bigs.
That's impressive, you know, and we talked last week about him being kind of Jekyll and Hyde, where when he's not good, he's not good. But when he's on, I mean, he's one of the most dominant guys in the league. And that K to walk ratio is a big reason why. He just doesn't throw he throws a lot of strikes. And, you know, the ball just jumps off his hand. So, you know, 10 strikeouts in 7 innings, I'll take it all day long. He pitched really well again.
So it's kind of weird to see a guy with such good control and a lot of strikeouts, but still he could have a bad game. You usually see a guy, if he struggles, okay, maybe he walked a lot of guys and that's why he had a bad game. But Pineda always seems to be striking out a lot of guys and not walking anybody, but sometimes he's just giving up 9 or 10 hits for, I don't know why. I don't know what the reason is.
Yeah, it's strange. You're right. It is strange when you think about it because of the control that he has. Usually those guys can get through and just kind of battle through.
Especially they don't with have his stuff.
Yeah, they don't have the implosions usually, but he's definitely had some implosions this season. So it's kind of head scratching to see why he has those. But this is why he is Big Mike. You know, he comes out the next time 7 innings, 10 Ks, no earned runs, 5 hits. So he's a dominant guy, and if we can get to that postseason, man, that's a guy you want out there.
So it was a 2-0 game going into the ninth, and Betances on the mound. You figure, you know, let's wrap this up. 4th of July win. I'm gonna go have a beer and another hot dog and not even worry about this. But he ended up giving up a 2-run home run to Souza Jr., who coming into the day was 0-for-25.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. He made a bad pitch and Jr. hit it, and that was it. I mean, he hit the ball. He hit the ball well, and Betances was mad. If you saw his reaction after that, he knew he made a bad pitch, and Souza Jr. made him pay for it. So does this change anything on how I look at Betances? No, not at all. Not even a little bit. I have full confidence, and I 100% believe he will shake it off, and he just comes right back out.
Yeah, he hung a slider in the middle of the plate, and I don't care if a guy is 0-for-25 or 0-for-500. I mean, he's a major league hitter. He's
right.
Hit a hanging slider in the middle of the plate.
Yeah, and so he's a dangerous hitter too. Souza Jr. He's shown some life against us earlier in the season too. I know he's not hitting for average, but he's definitely got power, and I think you know, he's a guy who could definitely make you pay for it especially if you're hanging a slider in the middle of the plate.
But Betances ended up getting the win because the Yankees walked off, playing a little small ball Saturday, a little different than Friday night where they won it with the long ball. But Teixeira led off the inning with a double, and then Perella pinch ran. Chris Young ended up walking, and then Ramon Flores bunted, but the pitcher for Tampa, Boxberger, threw a low over to first base for the short hop Loney, and Perella was hustling all the way. Good base running, but also ballsy base running to go home on that play when there's no outs. You sort of, if you're out, that sort of kills the rally there. But he was safe and they won.
Yeah, that's one of those where you're like, no, yes, yes, yeah. No. But yeah, he was safe and he got it. You just wanted to say Boxberger too, didn't you? I feel like that's such a great name to say.
That's a good baseball name.
That's a good one, yeah, Boxberger. But yeah, he, you know, that was a good move getting Perella in to run. And Perella did his job. You know, Young had a good at bat in that game too. He had a couple or a failed bunt attempt and then kind of took a weak hack, but he actually worked out that walk. It was a good at bat by him. So a little bit some credit there to move the guy over in a non-conventional way.
Do you think you could bunt at the major league level?
Probably not. I'd say I would like to think I can, but when it came down to it, probably not.
But you could bunt when you're in high school, though, right?
Yeah, I could absolutely bunt. I could bunt after high school.
Why the hell can't major league hitters bunt?
I don't know. They just, I guess a lot of these guys don't do it, you know, and when you're out of practice, I don't know. It seems like it's like a foul shot.
Right, yeah.
Just like hit the foul shot. I mean, I could go into the NBA and hit foul shots. I guarantee it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I could definitely hit foul shots. No doubt about it.
See, I think I'd be a better bunter than foul shooter.
Oh, I don't know. I could definitely. I mean, there's no variable with the foul shot. I mean, it's you in the hoop. That's it.
The crowd.
You got a guy throwing 100 miles an hour at you.
Yeah.
You're the crowd, I guess. But you know, mental toughness right there.
I smell a contest between you and I.
Okay.
Maybe
a foul shooting contest and a bunting contest.
Yeah. Maybe when we get together in August in the Bronx, we can get this going.
Perfect. Let's do it.
All right, so two walk-off wins, the first and second walk-off wins of the season for the team. So great wins. They win the series, but sort of laid an egg today, Sunday, in the Bronx. 8-1 loss, and a few things happening in this game. First of all, Nova started, and that's in place of CC. CC was pushed back 3 days. So that we'll get into that in a second, but that's some news right there. But the offense, again, nothing going against Erasmo Ramirez, who is not the type of pitcher that should shut you down.
Right, but his last, I want to say his last three starts, I don't have his numbers in front of me, but I remember hearing when I was watching the game, his last three starts, he's had like a one ERA. I mean, he's been really hot lately. Not to say that's, you know, a big reason. Obviously, it's helping. You know, he's pitching well right now, but it's just going back to the fact that the Yankees are so hot and cold that it's, you know, feast or famine with these guys. But you kind of felt like this, I don't know, going after two walk-offs, or like, are we really going to get a win on Sunday? It just felt like we were going to lose the game. It's just, I don't know, it's like baseball correcting itself.
Well, when the game was 4-1 and A-Rod hits the home run, I'm like, they got a chance.
Yeah, I mean, there's a chance there, no doubt. It puts them on the board. And then you're right. That's where a little bit of an implosion happens in the field, and then the game at that when it became 6-1, it felt like it was, you know, we didn't have a chance.
Yeah. So it seemed like the team may, like you said, had a little bit of a letdown from the two previous days.
Right.
Definitely sloppy play. Nova made a crucial error in the fifth, led to a run, and then a couple sloppy plays in the eighth inning that broke the game open. Didi, why don't you describe this play because you were watching it?
Yeah, so Didi, it was Evan Longoria was up and kind of had a check swing. It was like a bleeder going out to shortstop. And Longoria just got mad and out of the box, threw his bat, and did not run. I mean, he was just kind of moping to first base. And I guess Didi didn't pick that up and didn't see Longoria what he was doing, and tried to barehand the ball on the infield grass, and just couldn't get a grip on the ball. And Longoria was safe, when in reality, he could have sat there, had a cup of coffee, fielded it with his glove, thrown it over, and he would have been out because Longoria was not hustling down to first base. So it's just one of those, again, we've talked about this with Didi, is it's an awareness play. Like, you should kind of know what that runner's doing at that point, if he's booking it or if he's just kind of moping down. And he had no clue. He didn't see any of that. And he kind of rushed the play when he didn't have to. So that was it. And then the Perella just booted a ball. There's no other way to say it. He booted a ball, then rushed the throw and threw the ball away.
Yeah, and that led to the game being – so Perella got a double error on that play, and then that led to the game being totally blown open. But, you know, you wonder why Steven Drew is still on the roster, and it's because Perella's out there booting balls at second base.
It's Perella's booting balls. He's an average defender, and then the other guy that we have is – everybody's been calling for Refsnyder. I'm guilty of it as well because I'm all – you know, we all want his bat. And kind of the youthful exuberance that he shows on the field, but he can't field the ball either. So you're right. That's the reason he's there. He's batting 180, but he's got pop and he can defend. Well, I don't think Steven Drew is a Gold Glover at second base by any stretch of the imagination. He makes the routine play, and he makes the majority of the plays.
Compared to Perella, he's a Gold Glover.
I mean, I guess so. Perella hasn't been terrible. He's not known for his glove, but he is known in the past for having, you know, an average glove. We kind of knew what we were getting from him. He's not gonna kill you with the glove unless you're today. But he's got a, you know, well, in the minors he had a plus bat, and he's not showing that plus bat. He's really not stepping up to the challenge, to tell you the truth. So that's another reason why Steven Drew is there, because Perella's not hitting either.
Yeah, I don't think they're playing him enough though. Where he
I agree
can get
with that too.
Going like you play. You get four at-bats, five at-bats every 4 days. It's like you can't get in a rhythm that way.
I get it, but, you know, at what point that has to become – it can't be an excuse anymore, because you're now playing a role on the major league club.
Yeah.
So you have to take advantage of those opportunities. You know, whatever you got to do, get more work in the tunnel, you do what you got to do. But he's got to be hitting. I think he was at 203 or 206 today. When I saw his line, you know, he's not doing what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, I got you. So
and he's not taking advantage. It's an opportunity that he's not really taking advantage of, and it's a shame.
I'd love to see him take advantage of it because, you know, I think I'm like the softest one on Steven Drew, but I still don't like him out there hitting 180. So I'd love it if Perella could play a solid second base and get his bat going, but I just haven't seen it yet. And
I feel like I'm getting numb to Steven Drew. I feel like I'm just like, oh, he's out there. I'm like, it's all right, Steven Drew. I'm like, I'm getting used to it.
He's grown on you.
Not a good growing. But, you know, if you listen to some of Girardi's press conferences, I think it was Saturday. I think it was Saturday I was watching. And, you know, Drew hit the ball hard in Anaheim and didn't have much to show for it. I think he had a long double at one point, but he didn't have much to show for it. And he's been hitting the ball hard and been right at people. And Girardi just keeps talking about how any second now. He's still talking about this. We're in July 4th, and he's still talking about, you know, how he's going to come around at any minute. So I'm kind of sick and tired of that song and dance and just but he's on the team. I predicted June. I'm wrong, and I think he's going to make the entire season now.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, let's put it this way: he's not the reason they're losing when they lose. So
no, he's got pop too. I mean, he's a great guy off the bench, no doubt about it.
All right, that covers all the games this week, but definitely a lot of news, especially with this team, man. News every day. Beltran strained his oblique, left oblique in Anaheim. He kind of tried to delay, or they delayed putting him on the DL a couple days, seeing if he could maybe just rest it for a day or two. But he's on the 15-day DL now. As I said, left oblique, and that can be, especially with a guy at his age, that could be serious.
That is serious. I mean, you use that part of your body in almost everything you do in baseball. And it's also one of those things that lingers, right, and can come back at any time. It's like a hamstring or, you know, one of those injuries that when you're using that part of your body every single day and pretty much almost every motion, it's one of those things that's going to linger or come back at any point. So, yes, this is a big injury for him, I think.
And I think this got a lot of people clamoring for Judge.
Yes, no doubt about it. I mean, he's one step away, one step away. And, you know, listening to, again, hearing just Girardi talking, I don't think he's that far off. I really don't. I don't think he's that far off. I think he's actually closer than some of the fans may think. You know, a lot of us didn't think he was coming up this year. But that move to AAA really put him in position to come up to the Bronx. And I definitely see him coming up in the September as a September call-up.
Oh, my God. I would love it so much if he comes up and can make an impact late in the season for this team. That'd be so awesome.
Would be awesome.
To see the farm system producing, because they've actually had some guys come up this year and really help the team. So, you know, I love to see that versus these free agents.
I agree with that. I think, you know, Yankee fans are definitely enamored by their own. You know, we like to see our guys come up through the system and succeed. I mean, I think that's why, one of the reasons why Betances is so popular and why we like him so much. I mean, he's a guy from the Bronx who's doing well, and he's a homegrown guy. So, you know, we want to see more of that. And, you know, talking about one of the guys that has done well, Brian Mitchell, he had a decent outing today. Got kind of touched up at the end, but
yeah, you can't blame today on him. I mean, they made two errors behind him.
No doubt about it. But he's been pitching well. I mean, you know, coming into this, he's been pitching very well, and another one of those right-handed arms that we needed. And he's been up and has done well on the big stage. So that's good to see.
All right. So we talked about this a few minutes ago, but CC was pushed back 3 days, so he's going to start Wednesday. Nova pitched today instead of him. Andrew Marchand on Twitter today sort of floated it out there, or maybe whenever the news was happened, he floated out there that if the Yankees wanted to move CC to the pen, this could be the start of that. But I think you and I are in agreement that's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen, right? I think they're going to give him extra days off like they're doing now. So I see this happening more often, and I think everybody's just kind of hoping that he can, you know, pitch five innings. So that's what we're expecting at this point, right?
Yeah,
innings. That's what we want.
I think they looked at the schedule and they're like, okay, he's going to pitch Wednesday, and then we've got three games in Boston, and then it's the All-Star break. So he's going to have, after Wednesday, like another probably 9 or 10 days off before he pitches again. And I think that's just to give him a little bit of a mental breather.
Right. You know, we had talked about last week, maybe, you know, if he came up with a dead arm and got a little bit of a break, that could be an option. And I think this is kind of giving him that mini little option too. So you have some flexibility when the All-Star break comes around to give some guys some rest, an extended rest. And I think that's what's happening right now.
But if he comes back, you know, out of the All-Star break and he's still laying eggs out there, they're going to have to do something with him. And I don't know what it is yet, but something's going to have to happen, because you at a certain point, when a guy's losing, you know, almost every time he goes out there, you can't keep sending him out there.
I agree. I mean, it's not good for anybody. It's not good for the player either, because, you know, at some point your confidence has to completely be shot and go away every time you're stepping onto that bump and good things are not
happening.
And
it sucks. So. It sucks to see a guy with CC who, you know, has been such a warrior for this team since 2009, you know, one of the biggest reasons they won the World Series, and then was their ace for the next 2, 3, 4 years, whatever it was. It just sucks to see, but it's the reality.
Yep. People get old. Things happen.
All right. More news is that Andrew Miller tomorrow, or as if you're listening to this today, on Monday, will be making a rehab appearance with Scranton. And I think they're hoping he's back before the All-Star break.
Yeah, you know, that's one of those guys that I personally, I'm like, you know, let's just put him on a couple more of these rehabs, and let's bring him back after the All-Star break.
Why is that?
I don't know. I don't want to rush a guy back like that. I think he's too important for us to rush him back. And I think with the injury that he had, I just want to be 100% sure that he's ready. And I think that time, you know, you're starting him up and then you're stopping him again for the All-Star break sometimes can be a bad thing, especially when you're talking about a reliever who pitches, you know, 3-4 times a week. So I don't know. I just kind of want him to get back and then stay back.
Yeah, I mean, I never really thought about that, you know, starting him up and then shutting it down for a few days. But I mean, I don't think they're rushing him. I think they've taken their time. I mean, it's been a month since he went out. So
yeah,
we'll see. We'll see if he's back before the All-Star break. But if not, I don't think it's a big deal. I think he'll be back definitely after. So, all right, more injury news. Ellsbury, we sort of have. I feel like Ellsbury's been on the cusp of returning for like 2 weeks now, and Girardi was quoted this week as saying, he'll be back when he's ready, which is just super descriptive.
Right. Well, and also last week we saw a day where he was not in the lineup and everybody was freaking out because why is Ellsbury not in the lineup when he just played? And it was a day off because he had just general fatigue was, I think, the way that they put it. But, you know, what Girardi was saying, he's going to be back when he's ready, and he's just trying to get his legs under him. But the early report, the initial report, was that he was going to be back on this past Friday. That didn't happen. So what that leads me to believe is that he's going to be back sometime this week. I guarantee Ellsbury is circling that Boston series. So,
absolutely. I think we'll see him at Fenway. Get a little bit of probably play 2 days this weekend at Fenway, and then I'll have the All-Star break off again, like you said. All right. So a report, and I don't really know where this came from, but it was on, you know, the CBS New York, that the Yankees are interested in starting rotation help, which is obvious. One of the guys was Samardzija that they're interested in from the White Sox, because the White Sox are kind of having a down year, and so is Samardzija. But I think he could be a great acquisition. But another guy that was floated out there that the Yanks are interested in is Clay Buchholz, which I don't really know how much validity is there, but I don't know about you. I don't see the Yankees and Red Sox trading, especially for Clay Buchholz.
No, he's way too big of a name to cross over in a trade. There, I mean, the last trade, and there hadn't been one for a long time, but it was Stephen Drew and
Kelly Johnson.
Thank you, Kelly Johnson, the forgettable Kelly Johnson.
That was the first one since the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. And that was like, I'll take your baggage, you take my baggage.
Yeah.
And so there's no possible way that's happening. I'm gonna put a Scott running guarantee on that. Clay Buchholz will not be in a Yankee uniform unless it's a free agent move later down the road. But there's no possible way they're trading.
Couple things, and I kind of hate that I'm even entertaining this. One, I don't think the Red Sox are going to trade Buchholz because he's still locked up for 2 more years after this year. And I honestly don't think the Red Sox think they're out of it, even if we think they are. And number two, if they were to trade him, it would be for prospects. And I don't see the Yankees giving up, you know, some of their young talent for a guy like Clay Buchholz, who's frankly, I mean, yeah, when he's pitching and healthy, he's good, but he's hurt half the time.
And we're not sending our prospects to Boston. That's just not going to happen. Exactly. It's never going to happen.
So I think it's just more fun to talk about than actually think it's practical.
Yeah, I think CBS Radio was looking for something there on that one. Now Samardzija could be that could be a name I could see a lot more because he's one of those guys who you know, who could come in and definitely help. So we'll see what happens. I personally don't think they're going to go after a frontline guy. I think they're going to go after a guy who can eat innings and kind of just bolster the back of the rotation. I see a guy like that more than I do a frontline guy for Samardzija that's going to take a lot, because I really think the Yankees are trying to protect their assets.
Well, it is Shark Week this week, right?
It is, yeah. There's been like 8 attacks in North Carolina.
Well, and Samardzija's nickname is Shark, right?
Oh, I didn't know that, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
This was a bad joke. All right, we're halfway through the season, exactly halfway, 81 games. I figure this would be a good time to sort of assess some of the free agents that they signed or retained over the offseason. So what do you think?
Let's do it, man. Let's check it out.
All right, first up, Chase Headley, who probably, he was the biggest position player that they signed over the offseason. We all know he came over at the trade deadline last year, had a pretty good second half for them. but in my opinion, has been underwhelming in the first half this year. What are your feelings on him?
He's been underwhelming because I think people have bigger expectations for him because of that contract. That's what I think Chase Headley has been. But a couple things on him. One, his defense was crazy weird in the beginning of the season, right? It was like he was making unforced errors that you just didn't see. But I think he's really tightened that up as of late. I think he's definitely become he's more of the guy that we thought he was, a sure-handed third baseman. And he's definitely been hitting the ball better recently. So I don't know. To me, he's kind of like that steady guy at third. I think he's a good addition. I think he's a good clubhouse guy. I think he, you know, plays his ass off. I like the Chase Headley move. I'm glad he's there. And I'm comparing this contract directly to the Panda. And I love looking at it because I love looking at the contracts, because everybody who says the Chase Headley contract was terrible, go look over at that contract that Pablo Sandoval signed in Boston and look what he's doing. Just please look at the numbers. Look at what he's doing, what a distraction he is, and then look at the numbers again, and then you will say, I am so happy that Chase Headley is my third baseman.
So the numbers are actually kind of funny that they're so similar.
Yeah.
I mean, everything down to the on-base percentage is only like a few points off. But you're right. The Yankees got Chase Headley for half the money that the Red Sox are paying Sandoval. And Sandoval can't hit right-handed. Just absolutely can't hit right-handed. But the one thing is that, I mean, Headley has 16 errors, which I know you said some of them were weird, but 16 errors is way too many errors at this point in the season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he definitely had a lot of struggles early in the season. I'm just talking about as of late, I think he's really tightened that up. And I think that it was kind of fluky. I mean, I mentioned that early when it was happening. I thought it was fluky then, and I still think it's a fluky thing, because I know you when you talk about defense – and I think defense more than offense, you look at it, you can look at the history of kind of what they do. And he's always been a plus defender. So, and you know he makes the spectacular play. He's got that over-the-top throw that he was kind of off for a little while. But I think he's settling back in there.
All right, next up, Andrew Miller.
Love it. I mean, how can you not like it? The only blemish he had early in the season was that Ryan Zimmerman home run that somehow, I don't know how the hell that thing stayed fair, but it did. But he's been awesome. I mean, this injury was I think a bump in the road, but I mean having him and Betances in the back is just it's so valuable to have, and I love the move.
Yeah, I mean you can't say anything bad about that so far. I'm not even going to get into the numbers because we all know the numbers, and I can't wait till he's back because it totally makes the game. It changes the entire game for the Yankees, turns it into a 7-inning game, maybe even like a 6-inning game. So absolutely home run in my opinion.
Yep, no doubt.
All right, Steven Drew.
I mean,
they signed him to a 1-year, $5
million. $5 million. You're right. So, I mean, it's $5 million to the Yankees' pocket change. You know, he's a guy that has flexibility. He gives us that. That's great. I'm being monotone because I'm sick of talking about Steven Drew. but yeah, he's still batting 180. He's not going to get to the Mendoza line this year because he's really digging himself a grave, and he has pop. So, you know, he's there. He's going to be there. So I hope he can make – I hope Steven Drew hits a really big home run this year. I really do.
Well, he already has.
I mean, a big one to, like, win the World Series. I mean,
well,
like,
yeah.
Like
yeah,
a
I
big,
hope that
big
too.
Home run.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Because it'll justify everything. I will love him forever.
Well, that's what happened with J.D. Drew in Boston. He signed a big contract before the 07 season, or I think before the 07 season. And he was just terrible all year. Red Sox fans hated him. And then he hit a grand slam in Game 7 of the ALCS. Pretty much won them the game. And they won the World Series that year. And no one said a bad word about J.D. Drew after that. So
yeah, that's what will happen. So, you know, it's Steven Drew is just eh. Eh.
Agreed. Chris Young.
Chris Young's been awesome. I love the Chris Young move because, one, he was terrible with the Mets. And he came over here and has been tremendous, which is funny to me. It just humors me. And the fact that he carried the team in early in the season in April and into May was awesome, because honestly, without Chris Young, this team would have been, I think, you know, a few games back to where they were. I mean, he definitely added wins to the season because of he was carrying the offense for a long time. And then he had a scorching June as well. And he's been finding regular playing time again. So with Beltran hurt, and having him with flexibility to play the outfield positions, I think he's a really big addition. I think he's a big part of this team.
Agreed. So those are sort of four of the more moderate, you know, contracts that the Yankees handed out this year. But a year ago, before the 2014 season, they made a $500 million investment in the team in Tanaka, McCann, Beltran, and Ellsbury. And there was an article on ESPN.com this week that Andrew Marchand wrote, and it's kind of interesting, sort of assessing all those guys over the last year and a half and if they've been worth it to the Yankees. And I want to read one quote from Cashman that I thought was just classic Cashman. He says, "Money doesn't always equate to performance. In fact, most of the time, it will never equate. That's the cost of doing business. Signing a player to a long-term contract is like buying a car. They don't tend to get better with age, and the ones that do are probably cheating." I laughed when I read that because I think Cashman's always been transparent with the media. He's always been forthcoming. And, I mean, he's basically admitting that, you know, you sign these guys to 6, 7, 8 year deals, they're most likely not going to work out.
And I think a lot of people beat him up for some of that stuff. But, you know, that's what it takes to sign guys. You have to do it if you want them. And granted, you're going to get a short-term return, I think. But that's why they do it. You know, they know that going into it. So it's kind of one of those things you deal with. And, you know, assessing those acquisitions that you were talking about when we made that a big offseason, Tanaka, McCann, Beltran, and Ellsbury. I mean, these guys have all contributed. Beltran's probably the one guy that, you know, that we could have done without because of, well, a couple things. One, he's been not very good. He's been injured. And we have, you know, depth in the minor leagues in the outfield, corner outfield position. So there's guys that can come up and play, I think, can play effectively. I think can play on the major league level right now. So, but you can't knock Tanaka because you just can't because he's a number one stud. McCann has really been, I was kind of hard on McCann early in the season, but he, you know, he's really proven to be, like you said, a leader. He's leading the guys out in the field. You know, he's hitting big home runs. He's just a gritty guy. I think he's been much better than advertised behind the plate. Especially throwing guys out. You see a lot of more pass balls with him, but yeah. And then Ellsbury, I think, is a game changer when he's on the field.
So I'm going to start with Beltran. 3 years and $45 million for a guy who was already like at the end of his career, I think was way too much. I think what Cashman was hoping is he would fill in right field until some of the young guys came up. But he's just been injured pretty much the whole time since he's been here. And I think you could have filled in that outfield spot with other guys. And we've seen them do it, right? Like Chris Young has been more than adequate of a fill-in outfielder for $1.5 million. I think they could have done something like that versus shelled out $45 million for a guy like Beltran.
Totally agree.
Ellsbury. I, at the time, hated the Ellsbury signing because I felt they could have used Ellsbury and Beltran's money to re-sign Cano. And I know they didn't want to go 10 years with Cano, but I, at the time, made the argument, I'd rather have 10 years of Cano than 7 years of Ellsbury. So far, Ellsbury, like you said, when he's been playing, has been awesome. But his history is that he gets injured a lot. So when you sign a guy who relies on his legs late into his 30s, you're going to have injuries. I don't know. I think the jury is still out on Ellsbury.
Well, one of the things about Ellsbury too, and I have a feeling this was talked about too when he had that contract, was Ellsbury has the ability later in his career to kind of transform. You know, if his legs aren't what they used to be, he's shown power in the past too, and I feel like he's one of those guys.
One season.
I get it, but I feel like with the way Yankee Stadium is, I feel like he's one of the he could really, you know, he could transform his game a little bit. I feel like he has that ability. So, and Cano's doing terrible, and everybody in Seattle knows it.
Well, that's because he misses New York.
Yeah, team does. He misses it so badly.
McCann, I've loved so far. I think especially this year, he's you know, he's got like 50-something RBIs or whatever. Yeah. He's been absolutely a rock behind home plate, and I think McCann probably has been the best of those signings so far. Tanaka, I think, like Ellsbury, I'm still up in the air because, yes, when, you know, if you asked me in July of last year, I would have been like, that's the best $150 million the Yankees have ever spent. They just got an ace in his mid-20s, but that ace might be hurt a bunch, and he's looked sort of rocky since he's come back, so I think it's still, the jury's out on him. But I just thought it was an interesting read. They break down all the stats of these guys over the last year and a half, and $500 million is nothing to sneeze at, and, you know, right now, what it's gotten them is a missed playoff appearance last year, and then they're a game up in the division this year, so... Speaking of the AL East, I think we got a voicemail from somebody out in Colorado that we're going to play talking about that topic.
Hey guys, this is Steve in Colorado. Hey, just have kind of a rant or I guess a comment. Wanted to know your opinion. As you guys know, the AL East is so tight. It's so close. It's much closer than any of the other divisions. And I basically just wanted to know why you think that is. With the exception of Boston, so four teams that are this evenly matched, are these four teams that haven't tried hard enough to take the lead? Is it just happenstance and luck that they're this evenly matched? You know, it's frustrating because over the past month, it's such an opportunity lost to pull ahead. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, Pete in Colorado. I think you said your name is Pete. I couldn't quite hear there. But Scott, he was asking, you know, why is the AL East so tight this year? Everybody's bunched up with the exception of the Red Sox right now. You know, why do you think this division is so tight?
I think it's just in general, it's mediocre. That's why. I think it's mediocre. I think the Yankees have by far the most talent in this division, and the pitching everywhere else I think is just not as good. And I think the teams beat up on each other a lot because of that. So to put a finger on it, I just honestly don't think it's as good. I don't think it's that good of a division this year. So I think we're going to see a lot more bunching. I wouldn't be surprised if Boston climbed back into it at some point and we were all just bunched at the top until the last week of the season. I would not be surprised. But at the same time, I would not be surprised if the Yankees came out and put you know, a nice little winning streak and separated themselves by four or five games, because I do think they are the best team in this division. So coming back after the All-Star break, we have a lot of injuries that are kind of coming back, and I think we're poised for a nice little run.
So I agree that the division is mediocre, but I think the entire league is mediocre. When you look at it, I mean, the AL East is the only one where there's four teams within two games of each other. Right. But if you look at the records of, you know, Kansas City and Minnesota, who are top in the Central, they're not much better. They're two games ahead of the Yankees. Houston is four games ahead of the Yankees, and then LA is right there with the Yankees. So I just think that's the reality of baseball this year. There's a lot of parity.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's definitely, there's no one standout team. I don't think anybody is really just head over heels better than another team. So, and it seems like everybody has a couple top line starters that could do well in the postseason. But I think in the AL East, you see less of that, right? Like Boston doesn't have it. Toronto to me doesn't have it. Baltimore is, I don't think has a top line starter. So, you know, I think Tampa has a couple guys that could be that, but I think the top line pitching in the AL East is a little bit, less competitive than in the other, divisions.
So Pete asked why, or he said that the Yankees missed an opportunity to pull ahead. And I agree, they did miss an opportunity, but I don't think any of the teams are capable of pulling ahead. So we're going to be sitting here in the middle of September, and I've said this a million times, it's going to be a two-game difference between probably at least three of those teams. So whoever can win the most games in September, I think, is going to make the playoffs. And who knows, maybe they'll have a wild card spot. Something we didn't think was going to happen, like you said last week.
Yeah,
but it could happen.
Oh, it's kind of lining up that way. We're going to be in competition for that spot, so no doubt.
All right. So before we wrap up this week, you're going to Hank's Yanks tomorrow, right?
Yes, I'm pumped up for it. Rich Kaufman, our editor, and I are going to be going to the Hank's Yanks Golf Classic at Ferry Point in the new Trump Course in the Bronx. So we're going to be going there for the cocktail hour and dinner and. Hopefully meeting a whole bunch of Yankees. The Dellin Betances will be there. A-Rod will be there for a little bit. And then a slew of former Yankees will be there as well. A lot of the Yes guys will be there. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully we can get some – I have some good stories hopefully when I come back, and maybe some good pictures and possibly some audio footage. So yeah, looking forward to it. It's for a great cause. Dylan Betances is getting honored, and they're going to be doing a silent auction, but the honoring Dylan for a lot of his community work in New York. So he's been a great role model, I know, for a lot of the young kids in New York and especially in the Bronx. So well worth it. And then A-Rod is also going to be there as well. And we're going to be doing a silent auction for Hank's Yanks Charities. And I think they're splitting it up between a few other ones. So exciting, and it'll be a lot of fun. And I'll definitely report on it next week.
Sounds good. Make sure you follow Bronx Pinstripe, Scott on Twitter, Rich as well. I'm sure they'll be tweeting out a lot of pics, Instagram as well. And maybe we can get a blog recap of it up on the site this week as well.
Oh, definitely we will.
Sounds good. All right. Happy 4th, everyone, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.